Everybody, it's me, Nobody, and welcome to the 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, brought to you from right outside of Columbus House, which is a shelter here in New Haven, Connecticut. The first time the Homelessness Marathon has ever been sighted outside of a shelter where people sleep at night. A lot of things are going to happen this evening. We are going to be talking to a lot of homeless people. We're going to be talking to a lot of experts on homelessness. And we're going to be taking your calls from around the country. You can call in at 877-NOBODY-8. That's the word nobody and the number 8. Or you can call in if you're homeless, formerly homeless, afraid you're about to be homeless. You can also call in a special number, 866-LEFT-OUT. But the first thing I'm going to do is the first thing I do every year here on the Homelessness Marathon. I'm lighting a little memorial candle for all of the homeless people who have died since our last broadcast. It's very important to us that people understand that we are not here just talking about politics. We are not here just talking about philosophy. We've got our booth outside. Tonight's fortunately a fairly warm night, but it's a rainy night. It's not a night I'd want to be sleeping outside in. Could have been a lot colder, and unfortunately sometimes it is. There's people looking around for shelter tonight all across this country. And a lot of people, they die out there. They die in the cold. They die of hypothermia. They die because of sometimes carbon monoxide with unsafe heaters. They die because of untreated medical conditions. They die every which way when they're homeless. And they die at a rate from these things they shouldn't be dying of if they had houses. And this show is dedicated towards getting homeless people into houses. So I have lit, I know you can't see it on the radio, a memorial candle for all the homeless people who have died. Now, I want to make one little note before we launch into the rest of the broadcast. I want you to know that I was a Democratic candidate for Congress. I lost in the primary to a more mainstream candidate. Later in the broadcast, we're scheduled to have Pat LaMarche on this broadcast, who was the Green Party's vice presidential candidate in this most recent election. And some of you may wonder, where are the Republicans? Where are the conservatives? Where are they? Why aren't they on this program? Have we failed in our obligation to present balance? Well, you know, we're not trying to balance everything artificially. As Edward R. Murrow once said, sometimes a story doesn't have two sides. But we do think it is important that a conservative point of view and Republicans and so forth be represented here. And it's important for a lot of reasons, but not just journalistically. It's important because I have learned myself over the 8 years I've been doing this broadcast. I am increasingly convinced that the American people want this problem of homelessness solved. They want it addressed. I believe that there are many good, upstanding Republican and conservative citizens who may have a viewpoint different than mine about how this should be solved, but who nonetheless have a great deal of compassion for the poor and really want our nation to address this problem, and their voices should not be left out. But the question is, where were we going to get Republicans from? And it seemed only logical at the present time that the Republicans should come from the White House. When I did the very first broadcast of the Homelessness Marathon on one tiny station in central New York, I called up the Clinton administration. I was no fan of theirs. I was a big critic of theirs. I blame a lot of the problems we have today with poverty on the Clinton administration, but never mind. I called up the White House and I asked, could they send a spokesperson? And they eventually sent me Andrew Cuomo's deputy at HUD, who came on at some ungodly hour, 1 a.m. or something, and talked about the administration's policies and what they were going to do, and addressed the audience when this was a tiny broadcast. For the last 2 years, last year we were on more than 80 stations, this year we're on more than 90, and for the last 2 years we have sent faxes and phone calls to the same office in the White House Department of Media Affairs for the radio branch, and the Bush administration has not responded. They have not even acknowledged our requests. And I personally draw the line. I am not going to go fishing around for a spokesperson for people who won't speak for themselves. If the Republican administration does not want to speak for itself to this audience, does not want to address homelessness on this broadcast, as is their right, that is why there is no Republican co-host going to be on the broadcast tonight, because they declined to even take notice of us. But for those of you who are Republicans and conservatives who are out there and have something to say, I hope you will call in and do a better job of representing what you believe in than this White House has done. Okay, so much for preamble. Here in our booth, which we call the Tabernacle of Truth, because it comes and goes in a night, but we always try to tell the truth here, I am joined by Leslie and Cheryl. Leslie and Cheryl, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Thank you.
Well, I'm very glad to have you both with us, and I know that you are both single women, and you're actually both mothers as well.
Right.
Who are currently homeless, and I'm being joined now by a third woman in the booth whose name is?
Abby.
Abby, welcome to the broadcast, Abby.
Thank you.
So we have here a panel of single women who are homeless here in the booth. Let me start with you, Leslie.
Yes.
I am sure there are some simple questions that people are going to want to know out there, very simply. Like, they're going to ask, how come you're not living in a fancy palace? How did you come? Are you staying here in Columbus House?
Yes, I am.
They're going to want to know, how did you wind up in Columbus House? Why don't you have a house, and why don't you have a home? What happened?
Well, it's a long story, but actually over the years I've been unemployed. I had a hard time finding a decent job that would be able to pay me enough money to be able to make a decent living. But eventually I ended up being evicted out of my apartment because of the fact I couldn't afford to pay the rent. On time, I had to pay when I could because I wasn't making enough money on my job. And I guess the landlord just got upset about it and she ran to the court and I was told I had to move. And I had nowhere to go and I had family out there, but no one wanted to take me in. And I ended up sleeping on the streets. I ended up sleeping wherever I could. And then eventually, someone told me about the Columbus House, and I came to the Columbus House, and I was in emergency. And eventually, they offered me a room upstairs, paying $350 a month, which is something that I could afford. And now I have a job making a little bit more money, and I'm able to go out there and hopefully find a decent place to live now.
Now, Leslie, people, that's the reason we do this show. We want people in America to know who are the real people who are struggling in this economy. And people will think, they're told. And God bless you. If you would have been coming on here and you would have been saying, I was a drug addict, I lost my housing because of that, I still believe you should have housing. I wouldn't hold that against you and say you should be on the streets. But just so we're clear on this, that's actually not your problem. You were not a drug addict. You're not somebody so mentally ill you can't hold a job.
No.
You're somebody who's trying to work and you're struggling to make it and you just couldn't make it enough.
Exactly.
Okay. Cheryl, what about you? Would you tell our listeners a little bit about how you wound up in Columbus House?
My husband passed away 2 years ago, and I moved in with my son and his family, and he lost his job, and I didn't get it. My pension wasn't coming, and we had no money. We got evicted because he was unemployed, and my checks didn't come, and I was evicted, and I was living, had no place to live, stayed with a friend here and there, and ended up here.
Now, you told me earlier you have three grown children.
Yes.
And again, I just want to ask the questions that anybody would want to know, because there will be people out there who will say, well, right, you got three. One of them must be making money. Why aren't you staying with one of your kids?
Because, they have their own families, and they can just about make their own ends meet. Mm-hmm. Nobody makes enough money to live as it is. They don't try to take care of somebody else. And I don't want to put that burden on them.
Okay.
And I want to be on my own. I want to have my own place.
Mm-hmm.
It's time for me to be alone. to be able to go do what I eat when I want, drink when I want, cook when I want, clean when I, do things on my own.
Right. Okay. So you don't want to be a burden to your kids, and you just feel it's a better arrangement to be an independent person, which I think most people
want
to be.
I want the children. I want my grandchildren to come and visit me and spend the weekend, and then they can go home. I want my kids to have a break from their children, not to have a mother to take care of.
Okay. Abby.
Yes.
You're not actually staying at Columbus House. Where are you staying?
I start Caraway's shelter for women and children.
Is that a transitional housing shelter? Is that?
Not exactly. It's basically the same thing as Columbus House, only you can have your children with you.
Oh, and do you have children?
Yes, I do. I have a 2-year-old daughter.
Okay. And Abby, can you tell our listeners just from the start something about how you came to be in the situation you're in?
Well, unfortunately, my story is probably one of the more stereotypical sad stories. I'm a 21-year-old mother of a 2-year-old. I happened to get mixed up with the wrong people in the wrong places and had a substance abuse problem. Throughout all of that, I ended up getting clean. In 2 days, I've been clean for a year. I got my daughter back, and you know, it's really hard to find housing, and there's not a lot of programs that are so quick to help someone who had a substance abuse problem because we're not too reliable, no matter what our clean time may be. So I struggle with it, but Caraway Shelter has been a blessing. It truly has. Facilities like this make our lives so much better, and they open a lot of opportunity for a lot of people.
Now, Abby, first of all, congratulations on being sober for almost a year.
Thank you very much.
I consider that an enormous achievement.
Thank you.
And we're not trying to gloss over the truth. I mean, we know that there are people who get into trouble with substances and so on. I don't believe they should be homeless. That's another story.
Oh, absolutely not.
But this happens, and you find a lot of people in that situation who are on the streets or in the shelters. But here would be my question for you. Maybe you can give us a sense of this, because some people, when they talk about people who are substance abusers who've lost their housing, they talk about it like it's a death sentence. Okay, well, that person's a substance abuser. No wonder they don't have a home. What are we bothering for them?
Exactly.
You know? And did you encounter these attitudes? Did you find it hard to overcome them? Do you feel that the other people you've known on the streets or homeless who have been substance abusers were just that kind of hopeless case? Or do you think there's more hope for people like that than is given credit? Give me some thoughts.
I think if there was hope for me, there's hope for anybody. It is very hard. Nobody really wants to give people like us a second chance, because sometimes I don't know if they believe we don't deserve it or if they think we'll just go back. But definitely there's hope. If you have a good heart and, you know, you're ambitious and you really want to go somewhere with your life, absolutely.
Have you been in treatment with other homeless people who were had substance problems?
Yes, I have.
And how are they doing? How are the other ones doing that you see?
The ones I stayed close to are still clean and doing well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you encounter a lot of people along the way, so some don't do as well as others, but the people that I stay close to and, you know, the people who really wanted it, you know, they generally stay clean and get their stuff together.
Do you think there would have been any way, if I'd have gone into a room with a lot of substance abusers who were homeless, and I'd wanted to say, okay, these ones I'll help over here because I can see they've got the mark on their little pinky, they're going to make it. And these ones over there have got a mark on their ear that says they won't make it. Is there some way you could have told in advance who was going to make it and who wouldn't?
Absolutely not.
So
you can never really know. And I think that's part of the problem, because people normally just see that everybody won't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you have a substance abuse problem, we're basically labeled for life. And that's really unfortunate for us, because, you know, you can't really tell who's going to make it or who's not. And, you know, the attitudes are, well, I don't want to waste my time and help this person because who knows what they're going to do tomorrow.
Okay. Cheryl, let me ask you something. Maybe you could tell, and again, we want to make people out there understand what life is like when you lose your housing. Can you tell us any of the things that happened to you when you lost your housing? Was it all peaches and cream, or did you have a few struggles to survive? What did you do? How did you get through your day?
It was terrible. You try to find, the first thing you try to find is where you're going to sleep that night. And you go to this friend and that friend, and can I stay? And it's, you always, you don't never know if you're going to have a place to sleep. You don't know. It's very difficult. I ended up in fights. I ended up with different drug people using drugs. Those people will take you in because they know how hard it is to find some place to live. Mm-hmm. So the people that will help you are people that have been there, and they tend to help you more.
You're telling me the drug addicts are more likely to help you if you're homeless than people who aren't?
Yes, because they've been there and they know what it's like to not have a place to live.
And does anybody else have this sentiment on this panel? Leslie, do you think that's true? Are people who are addicted, people who are having troubles in our society, are more likely to help you than people who don't?
Yes, I believe so. I think that the people that have been through situations in life, they're more understanding, and they have some type of compassion for those that are trying to do something with their life. But then again, you got people that feel, if you're not trying to do anything with your life, then I'm not going to help you.
So wait a minute. Now, I'm not really advocating this, but do you mean to tell me if I got all of America into drugs, there'd be more help for the homeless? Is that what we're saying here?
No, not really.
More people understood the situation that gets into homelessness, and more people understood that we really are good, caring people.
It's people at the margins, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's like that song, Proud Mary, people on the river are happy to give. People are down and out, whatever the reason.
Right. They're always willing to help each other. We always help each other. That's what's nice about Columbus House. We're all here to help each other. And if one makes it, that's a plus for all of us, because then we all know we can make it too.
Let me give out those numbers one more time. This is a call-in show. And, of course, we want to talk to my panelists here. But you're welcome to call in and ask them a question too. And people, if you're listening here in New Haven, if you're at Columbus House, or if you want to come here, you can come up to the mic and speak. We have a mic here for people to speak on the street. But the number to call in this broadcast, the main number for anyone homeless, housed, is 877-NOBODY-8. That's the word nobody, and the number 8. If you're homeless, formerly homeless, or afraid you're about to be homeless, you can also call in at 866-LEFT-OUT. Well, let me talk to you all about the other side of the coin there. I'll just go around. I'll start with you, Leslie. What about people who've treated you badly? Have you had any bad experiences on the streets?
Yes, not only in the streets, also with family members, too. I mean, there are people out there that they think that you can make it on your own. If you're single, they feel that you have less problems, but that's not necessarily true. I think being single and by yourself, it's even harder because it's only one of you. Like, rent out here is like $900, $800, and you're only making the minimum wage on a job, maybe $2 more than the minimum wage. And it's just not enough, and it causes such a hardship. I mean, you have to worry about eating. You have to worry about clothes on your back. I mean, it really creates such a hardship. And people don't understand. They think life is just grand for them because it's like two or three of them in a household, and they all bringing in income, and they look down on you. They have a tendency of looking down on you and think that because you're by yourself, you should have everything, and that's not true.
You've had people look down on you personally?
Yes, yes. I've had people look down on me and say, well, you should be doing better than what you are. You know, you don't have any children holding you down. You're not married or anything. But being single is not easy out here at all.
Mm-hmm. Cheryl, you were nodding your head. You've had people look down on you too?
Oh yes, and it's once they look down on you, you're labeled that you're always gonna mess up, them things are never gonna go right for you. They always believe that. It's so hard to get beyond that you can make it. Like, I've had substance abuse problems myself, besides everything else, and I've been clean 14 months. Mm-hmm. Yes, my husband died. It was really hard, and they just say, well, you're never gonna be, and they don't even believe you've been clean. You know, as good as you're trying to do. And you have people that just don't believe you.
Now, when your husband died, were you living in a house?
We had an apartment. We shared we had a subsidized apartment.
Okay.
And when he died, I lost the subsidy because it was through him, so they took the subsidy away.
Right.
Because I wasn't eligible because he was. I wasn't, even though I was his wife.
Right.
So I lost everything. And so it was very, very difficult.
But you were a person who was in a house.
Right.
And then
in the apartment.
Somebody, your husband died.
And I didn't get a pension right away. It took 18 months to get the pension. He was a veteran, a Vietnam veteran.
Mm-hmm.
And I should have got a pension immediately. It took 18 months.
But there was red tape, you were saying.
Yes, always red tape.
Okay.
And then I ended up in the streets, literally, and living with friends. And then I got beat up. As a grown woman, I get beat up on the street.
This is a question because, in fact, let me put this to Abby here. I have heard conflicting things from homeless people over the years. I have heard many homeless people tell me that homeless people watch out for each other. We take care of each other. There's a good spirit on the streets. But I, in all honesty, homeless people have also said there are some homeless people who rip you off. There are some homeless people who do bad things. Which way would you tilt if you were going to appraise that, Abby?
Well, there's bad people everywhere. Any kind of economic status, any place in the world, there's good and bad. I believe that there's more empathy towards each other if you're in the same kind of thing, like homelessness and the substance abuse. I think they're more up to help each other out. But I think there's a mixture. Not one dominates the other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Fair enough. We have a caller on the line. The numbers to call in here again are 877-NOBODY-8.
I'm going to be on pretty soon.
Like MPI. Anybody can call in 877-NOBODY-8. Or if you're homeless, formerly homeless, or about to be homeless, you're afraid, you can call in 866-LEFT-OUT. Is Lewis there from Jamestown?
Yeah, nobody.
Hi, Lewis. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing great. This is my favorite thing. I love doing this. What question do you have or comment for my panel here?
Well, I don't really have a question. I definitely want to comment on the... drug addicts will help you more if you're homeless or something.
Okay.
And I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Really?
I wouldn't call myself an addict per se, but I've definitely been around in the in the situations and whatnot. And I can tell you right now, not only have other people who've been in similar positions and been down and out been willing to help, but I've seen people that were amazed that, you know, all these say like a group of gutter punks who for once actually had a few dollars in their pocket, how more than willing they are to help.
Mm. Now, just to be clear, we're not saying that people treat you better because they use drugs. What we're saying is it's people who are marginal and know what it means to be on the fringes. They're the ones who might help. And some of those people have used drugs, and that's why they're marginal. But they might be marginal for other reasons, too.
Oh, exactly. People on the margins. The religious right is a lot less... common. You're less likely to help out, I've noticed. You know, they usually...
How do you know? How do you know if somebody's of the religious... If somebody walks by you on the street, how do you know?
Well, because they'll tell you to find Jesus instead of trying to, instead of giving you $5.
Hang on a second, Lewis. Anybody on this panel had that experience? Somebody told you to find Jesus and they didn't help you?
No.
No?
No, I never.
No, that is not an everyday experience.
No,
okay.
No.
Right.
I've
well, I'm sure that you women
Jesus,
on your panel are probably... relatively normal looking and
is radio. You can't tell. Actually, let me correct that. We have a webcam. Anybody wants to see what we all look like here, and these are very lovely women. Me, I'm the ugly one in the booth. But
right, but I'm sure
these are lovely women. If you go to www.homelessnessmarathon.org, www.homelessnessmarathon.org, there's a webcam you can click onto there. So, all right, Lewis. And so, were you homeless for a while?
Yes.
How long were you homeless for?
I'd say off and on for about a year.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, it was of my own volition, too, though.
Right. Right. What do you mean? You were voluntarily homeless?
Hanging out, running the streets of the country, traveling the interstate and whatnot.
So you were kind of a vagabond?
Yeah, the hippie thing.
Yeah, hey, I am a hippie.
Right, yeah.
And I'm old enough to be a real 60s hippie. So
right.
I did that in the 60s. I hitchhiked across the country. I wouldn't encourage anybody else to do it now, but,
Right, and that's exactly what I've done countless times.
Uh-huh.
And, I'll tell you, an alcoholic partying down the interstate is going to pick you up before somebody who is Christian or, I don't know how many times I would see people pass me with little Christian license plates or what have you when it's downpouring out.
Well, I know it's real popular to beat up on the Christian conservatives now. I'm not somebody who wants to do that. I think it ought to be noted that the religious community has been very active in terms of setting up missions and for many decades in terms of doing
that's
things.
That's very true.
Yeah. All right.
But well, it's just in the everyday activism.
Okay, but you are here to testify that, yes, in your own personal experience, people on the margins are more likely to help than people who've got a lot of money, just from what you personally have experienced.
Hands down.
Hands down. All right. Well, I want to thank you very much for the call,
yeah,
Lewis.
Thank you, and keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. May I call you ladies? That's not offensive to say ladies when I'm talking to three women here. Okay, I hope. All right. I got a question I'm embarrassed to ask, all right? You know, when I planned this broadcast, when we put our heads together, when would be the date, and we're looking at, oh, this weekend's not good, this day's not good, we got to, you know, we're going through a lot of things. One thing we never gave any thought to was that we would be starting the broadcast on Valentine's Day. And then, but whenever we told anybody February 14th, that's all anybody said. Oh, Valentine's Day. So I've got a Valentine's Day question, and I'm going to start with Abby, and I'm going to go all around, okay? As single women who are homeless, is there still some place for romance in your lives? Is that possible when you're broke, when you have no house? Is there such a thing as romance for you, Abby?
I can say yes and no. Yes. Sometimes I tend to have romantic ideas or even have a romantic interest, but for right now, getting my life together and doing what I need to do for myself is far more important than falling in love.
Mm-hmm. Cheryl?
I think that's the same thing. Right now, we're so busy trying to get our own lives together, we just can't take the time to... I don't want to take the time to try and know anybody else. I've just gotten on my own. I've got to try and find me and take care of me first before I try to take care of somebody else.
And
that's
Leslie.
What romance amounts to me.
Okay, Leslie, what do you have to say about that?
Well, actually, I do have time, but right now I'm focusing on me. I'm focusing on trying to get my life situated so that way I could be a better person for myself. I can't make no one else happy if I'm not happy, but there's always possibilities.
Okay, so if somebody walked into your life, you're not going to say, no, I'm looking at my watch, it's not the right time.
Yeah.
But it's not really something that you're right keen on right now. This might not be the moment in your life when you're expecting it, right?
Well, it's the confidence, basically. You know, you want to have that confidence knowing that you are able to present yourself. I mean, being homeless is sort of like embarrassing.
Okay,
you know?
I'll buy that.
It's sort of embarrassing. You don't want people to know that you're homeless, you know. You want to kind of keep it confidential. But I have a friend, he's in the Navy, but he understands my situation, and he's doing his thing, and I'm doing my thing.
Well, I remember from when I was a vagabond myself, I know there were a couple of things that were difficult for me from those days. Number one, it's hard to take a woman out on a date when you can't pay the price of a movie or something like that. And the other thing is, it's very hard to invite somebody over to your house when you don't have one.
Definitely.
These were a couple of things I encountered. So I know it's not optimal. But people shouldn't think out there that just because you're homeless, everything in your life stops and freezes, right?
No.
Okay, I'm still...
It's kind of hard to say pick me up at the shelter, though.
All right. Those numbers to call in again are 866-LEFT-OUT. That's if you're homeless, formerly homeless, or afraid you're going to be homeless. And anybody, homeless or housed, can call 877-NOBODY-8. On the line, we have Jason from Buffalo, New York. Jason, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Hi, how are you?
I'm just fine, Jason. What's on your mind tonight?
Oh, I just happened to walk up into my apartment and flip the radio on. I usually listen to AM Sports Talk, which is brutal in this town.
Uh-huh.
And if you turn from AM to FM, the public radio is on the exact same spot on the dial, and I started to catch what you began with, and I became very interested.
Oh, good.
I, myself, I'm an alcoholic. I haven't had a drink for over 3 years.
Uh-huh.
I was a professional chef, had a great career, wife, kids, the whole thing, and it all dissolved, as is typical.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, when I reached a point where I was homeless and I had nothing left, I checked myself into a detox, went from the detox to the rehab. While I was at the rehab, I realized after more than 20 years of drinking, I needed a little more help than 30 days in a hospital,
right.
So I went to a halfway house, spent 6 months there, went to a supported living house, spent a year there, and now I have my own house that I lease from the owner, lease to buy. I sublet the bottom apartment. Unfortunately, I'm getting a taste of how I used to be because the tenant hasn't paid in 3 months. Mm-hmm. I've gone from being a fairly accomplished chef. I run a soup kitchen here now.
Good
for
you.
And I feed between 200 to 300 homeless people every day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm amazed by some of the things I hear. The previous caller had kind of a vainglorious take on the vagabond mystique. And just previously, you were talking about it's hard to go out on a date when you can't pay for a movie ticket or invite somebody over when you don't have a place to stay. Priorities. I mean, if you're trying to get a date while you're homeless, your priorities are a little screwed up. And it's hard to tell someone who is locked in the midst of either a mental issue or a addiction issue what priorities might or should be. I know I'm not unique. We're all different, but not unique. There's more like each one of us everywhere. After many, many, many years of thinking I could fix things myself, I could about alcoholism, talking to every person I could, going to counseling, blah, 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 but I was never doing it for myself. I finally had to shut my mouth, accept what people were telling me, take their advice, and do the things people were telling me to do.
Mm-hmm.
Detox, rehab, and further outpatient counseling. I now do a lot of volunteer work for the rehab and detox. I volunteer time to cook for another homeless shelter. I just volunteered to help out with a literacy program. The things you do as you recover help your recovery, and they find one of the best ways to get yourself going is to volunteer or to do things for others instead of yourself, because much of an addict's life is focused on himself and no one else, and that's a huge obstacle to overcome. Listening to the panel, it's hard to detect the veracity or the honesty that's coming through the voices, because I have people that come in that try and run scams every day just to get an extra bag of donuts. A couple weeks ago, I took a punch over a loaf of bread, you know, but that's the state that some people get to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're handing people free food, and I'm not being arrogant, but I do take what I've learned as a career as a professional chef, and I try and use the skills to help make the food a little more palatable than just opening a can and heating up a bunch of vegetables, so they do get decent food. And you know, 90% of the people that come in, I've gotten to know them, shake my hand. Some of them have met my children, come out and volunteer a couple times. But, you know, there's instability in the population, so...
Well, let me say, first of all, Jason, that if I have to go to a soup kitchen, I hope I'm going to yours, because I want a good chef making my meal. And as a matter of fact, let me just quickly ask you, how good, would you give it an, I'm not talking about Columbus House, but in all the meals you ever got, free meals because you were poor, would you say the average grade, ladies, was an A, a B, a C, an F? Give me a grade. The average. I'm assuming it's wonderful at Columbus House, but anywhere else you ever were, okay? What would you say? Oh, come on. Somebody
go ahead,
can give
girls.
Me. What would you say?
Well, I would say an A.
You would? You'd say the food's not bad?
No, the food is not bad at all.
Okay.
Actually, they do take their time out to prepare the food for you, and I was actually shocked when I came to the Columbus House.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe the treatment that I've received. I wish I would have came here a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not the best in the world. It's not like eating at home American Beef Steakhouse or something like that. But they do try their best, and they bring people in.
There's nobody coming up to you in a tuxedo with a napkin over their
exactly,
arm saying, what may
exactly,
we get you tonight,
right.
Ma'am? But it's for what it is. It's good.
It's decent, and it's good, and the food is not bad at all.
Oh, very good.
There's always plenty of it.
And always plenty of it. Jason, in any case, one last question, Jason. What you're really here, though, I mean, you didn't exactly say this, but when you are speaking, what I'm hearing you say is that you, too, are someone. You're here to say being homeless is not the end of the line, being a substance abuser, it's not the end of the line, and there's a life after that for people.
Absolutely.
Okay.
From getting to know people, from being on the street, from getting to know people, from continuously working with people, the thing about your own kind taking care of yourself, I think that just stretches across every economic level. And, you know, I'm not sure what the proper way to phrase it would be, but when I have asked for help, I've gotten help. The type of help you receive depends upon the people you associate with.
Mm-hmm.
If you are looking for help from your fellow using active addicts, then you're going to receive the help that's on par with what they can offer. If instead you turn to a treatment facility or, you know, whatever it may be, your church, a social worker, whatever, you're going to get a level of response appropriate to that.
Mm-hmm.
You might, you know, somebody might watch your back on the street to make sure you don't get shivved in the middle of the night or somebody steals your shoes or something. But if you're looking for an instant solution, that's what you'll get. If you're looking for a long-term solution to your problem, that my recommendation would be to go seek someone who has been there, whether it's in, you know, one of the AANA fellowships. If you don't believe in that, then go to an outpatient treatment center. Go somewhere where someone will be able to give you constructive advice. They're not just going to lend you a dollar and or, you know,
okay,
support or something.
Jason, I want to thank
goes,
you.
Last thing, as far as the food goes,
yeah,
whatever the level of food is, if you're in need, someone's giving you free food, then it's always an A+.
Yeah, I certainly as far as the spirit is concerned. Jason, I thank you very much for calling into the marathon and giving us this piece, and congratulations to you for getting your life turned around. Thank you very much. We have somebody standing at the mic. We have this booth we have for people to come and stand, and it's a little bit sheltered. And we call the booth where I'm sitting, and I'm sitting with my lovely panel, we call this the Tabernacle of Truth, and we call that the Tower of Testimony. People have said to me, that's a little hokey, the Tower of Testimony. And I say, nothing is too good for homeless people. They deserve some hokum, too. Why are we going to not do that? But it's the Tower of Testimony, because that is where you can tell your truth. And so the person at that mic, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon. What's your name?
Trineen.
Well, welcome, Trineen.
Thank you.
And what would you like to say, Trineen?
I would just like to say homelessness is only a physical thing. It's not a mental thing. Yes, I do stay here, but I'm only here physically. I'm not here mentally. There's other things outside in the world that I know that I want and I can achieve.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But I need something to help me start that off. And so that's why I'm here. Not to be funny or anything like that, but yes, I did drink. I am alcoholic and stuff like that. So I started back from scratch. I came here to start from scratch. I do have a child that I want to take care of, that I was taking care of, but something happened in my life that's none of your business or anybody else's.
Okay.
But I came here
right
to just start from scratch again. I'm like newborn. I'm
okay.
Over 90 some odd days into my recovery. I'm doing my thing right now, but this is me right now. I'm fresh and new, and so me being here is like a starting point for me. I don't know about nobody else, but you got people in the Columbus house right now that got degrees better than you, her and everybody else that's standing out here running the show.
Right.
You got people that know 40 different languages up in there. Trust and believe, they're not homeless. They choose to be here.
Uh-huh.
That's because they want to. They got money coming in the whole night. They don't have to be here, but they do.
You
they
think there's people
here
living in Columbus House as clients who don't need to be in Columbus House?
Some of them don't, and some of them do. I'm not going to lie about it. Some of them are technically not homeless. They could take their checks every month and get their own place to stay.
There may be. I don't know the details of that.
Oh, well, I know it. I done seen it.
But I'll tell you, if you say there's people in here smarter than me, I'm sure you're right.
I know that every day, all day, honey, because you got me standing in the rain.
Hey, you're not in the rain. You're under a tarp. Don't tell the people at home we got you out in the rain.
No, he doesn't. Let me not lie to you. But I'm just saying, though, like I said, nobody's ever really homeless. Because if you always got someplace to go, if you got places like this, you're never really homeless. It's how you get treated once you get in here.
Well, Trineen, tell me this one thing. What is it that if you were going to say one thing that people around the country don't understand about the situation you're in,
mm-hmm,
what would it be?
Never judge a book by its cover, because mm-hmm, you don't know anything about me because you didn't open my book ever. Only person that knows about my book is me, because I opened it from beginning to end. Right now, I may be in the middle, but I always know what the end is going to be like, because I'm trying to get to the end.
Now, would you agree with the women I've been speaking to here in the sense that there are a lot of people, when you're homeless, when you're stumbling and you're having problems, they look down on you and they don't give you much of a chance? Is that your experience?
My experience?
Yeah.
No, because once I open my mouth, you already know.
Okay.
It's only what you allow people to do to you.
Uh-huh.
If I walked in here stumbling, drunk, so on and so forth, and allow everybody in here to do this, that, and the third, and the other to me,
yeah,
that's what I'm going to get. But I could walk in here stumbling drunk and still let you know my name is Trinine. This is the person that I am, and this is what I came here to do. I'm not having it. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, I hear you. No, and you're saying you've got your dignity and no one's taking
it. I got mine. My mother gave me that. God gave me that. That's my God-given right. Just like you got yours, and all of them have theirs.
Right.
But you only get what people allow.
Right.
Now, if I know there's programs in here and stuff like that that are going to be offered to me, and you're not doing your job to give them to me or show me how to get them, I'm going to get on your butt and get them.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm not going to mess with you, Trinine.
No, you don't have to. I'm just saying, though. That's me. I'm just adamant about it.
Uh-huh.
Now, there are people in certain situations that I can't do anything about, and they got situations that, you know, they can't help, so on and so forth. So that's where they're at right now. But me, myself, personally, I know there's a lot of people in here that got the same kind of mouth I got and can talk the same thing that I can talk and do the same things that I can do, but they just want to be here because that's laziness. But they can be here because they got issues, too. But I'm just saying, though, if you got it to give, give it. If it's here, it's offered to the people
okay,
like
so
me.
Trinine, what you're saying then is it's not one way or the other, though. There are people in the homeless shelter. They're not really doing everything they can do. And there's other people who really are trying and everything.
Basically.
Right? Yeah.
People that really are trying.
Okay. Yeah. It's not one or the other. Not everybody here is a misunderstood saint, but not everybody here is some terrible person either. It could be
correct.
Just like any other group.
Don't judge a book by its cover. Trust and believe that book that you judge will be your end, in your middle, in your beginning, if you keep judging them like that.
All right, Trinine. Well, listen, I thank you very much.
And I thank you, too.
Thank you for talking on the mic. All right, we got a call, another call I want to get to. So let's take this call from, what happened to Jean from Naples, Florida. Is she there? Jean, are you there? Did we lose Jean? Okay, I guess we lost Jean from Naples. So we got somebody else at the mic?
Am I not?
Oh, Jean, are you there? Have we got Jean?
Hello?
Is this Jean?
Hello?
Can any
I guess I'm on hold. Can anybody hear?
Okay, well, Jean obviously is not wired in, so we will, I tell you what, let me ask another question of my panel, and I'll just, we'll hope to get Jean in a moment. Now, let me tell the audience out there, and anybody who's not looking at the webcam, if you're looking at the webcam at www.homelessnessmarathon.org, you know I'm not lying. The worst looking person in this booth is me. So I got a question, and it's a question I kind of don't like to ask, but we're trying to really tell it like it is here. And there is an issue for women who are single women, vulnerability on the street. I mean, women, a lot of women are afraid to be walking down a dark street at night to begin with, to get home. Mm-hmm. When you don't got a home, pardon my grammar, it's maybe not so good. So let me ask you how this issue has been for you. Have you felt unsafe on the streets? Leslie, let me start with you. I mean, have you been in danger? Are single women on the streets in danger?
I believe so, yes. There are a lot of issues out there where you have a lot of women that are being raped in parks. You have a lot, I mean, the women are just looking for a place to sleep or how they might be on their way to work or what have you. And a lot of times jobs require you to go to work late at night and they have to take the bus. And, you know, there are a lot of sick people out in the street. And being a single woman, it's not safe at all. I don't believe it's safe out there.
Let me just make a note. If Jean is still listening, the control room says they're going to try and bring you up if you hang on the line. Cheryl, I mean, this is a really serious issue. I mean, because if people are complacent about homelessness and they think, oh, well, let them all be homeless and whatever. I don't know what people think. As Guy said, I think the American people are very good-hearted people. So I think American people want to help. But people should understand that a woman who is homeless is at risk. Is that correct?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And there's not enough places for us to go. Columbus House is the only place in this area for single women to go.
Uh-huh.
And like this, Caraways, like she said, for women and children. There's a couple other shelters for mothers and children, but this is one. And we just opened another place for women, an overflow place.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the only place in the area for women, for single women. And so if you don't come here, well, they accept women any hour of the night here. Any hour of the night, women
can
come here.
Well, God bless them for that.
Because of the fact that we're not safe, there's no place safe out there for women at night. You don't belong out there at night. That's why they let us come in any time. If you have to be homeless, if you get in a fight, an argument in your house, and you have to get thrown, you get thrown out, you can come to the Columbus House, no matter what time it is, and they will let you in the door.
Abby, if you're homeless and you're a single woman, Does that put you under pressure to hook up with a man just for protection, even if you don't like the guy?
No, I haven't.
Not you, okay.
No, I haven't been in that situation at all. But just, I think because of the facilities that they opened, you know, just for women and, you know, to help keep us safe, we don't have to resort to things like that, which we wouldn't want to do in the first place. So, thank God for Careways, I don't have to look to sources like that.
All right, well, believe me, I'm glad, but I want people to understand what the real dynamic is. And go ahead, Leslie, you wanted to say?
But there are women out there that feel that they don't have any place to go, and the women that feel they don't have any place to go, they eventually end up living in circumstances which are not comfortable. They might live with a guy or something and end up getting abused, and you know, they might end up in the street somewhere, all because they don't want to come to a shelter.
Or also because they don't know what resources are out there.
Exactly.
Some people have it so bad, and they kind of get into, like, a pity party, basically. And they're like, oh, poor me. What am I going to do? I have nowhere to go, so I have to stay. You know, a lot of these places aren't well-known enough that people know that they have a safe place to go all the time, and they don't have to put up with things like that.
Well, as a matter of fact, though, there are some shelters. I mean, not Columbus House, but there are shelters that are dangerous. So though some of them, some women are afraid to go into shelters, you think?
Well, I would think so, because I've heard, I can't actually say, because this is the first shelter that I've ever been in,
right.
And this is considered a decent shelter, but I've heard that the other shelters are not as decent as the Columbus House. So I really couldn't speak exactly on that.
But Abby, you're in a different shelter, right?
Yes.
And it's a decent place?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, good. I also, this is not New York City here or someplace, I mean, where you really have some bad shelters, I hate to say it, you know.
Yeah.
But, okay, we have somebody at the microphone. The person at the microphone, what's your name?
Marie.
Well, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon, Marie. What would you like to say, Marie?
It's just that this is a nice shelter. And I appreciate all the people that's been helping me and my case manager. It's just that I've been here 2 months. I've been clean for 2 months, and I've been here for 3 months. And I appreciate everybody that's doing everything for me.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason why I'm homeless is because I have family, but I don't want to go to them because they do bad things, and I'm trying to keep myself up and go forward instead of going backwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. That's fair enough. Were you on the streets before you came here?
No, I wasn't.
So where were you before you came here?
I was living with my cousin.
I see. So you were in a living situation that just became one you couldn't stay in after a while.
Right.
So then you were glad to have a place that you could come to.
Right.
And people will want to know, so let me ask you, what are you going to do to get your life together? Because you're not going to live at Columbus House for the rest of your life, so... What are you thinking is your life plan?
I've been keeping a track on my case manager, keeping on her and everything about trying to help me get a job. I've been going out there looking for jobs and everything, and she's been helping me out about housing and stuff. So I try to stay up on everything to let them know that I am out there willing and able to do anything I have to get out of here.
And are you currently employed?
I'm not working at the moment.
Okay, and what kind of employment would you be looking for?
Fast food, anything that puts my mind to it.
Okay. Well, in fact, stay there and let me just go down the panel. Leslie, what kind of work would you like to get?
Well, actually, I do have a job right now. I ended
up finding
a job. Yes, I work for SBC, believe it or not, but that's who I work at, and I'm grateful.
What do you do for SBC?
Well, I'm a 411 operator, telephone operator. I answer calls all over the world, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Singular wireless, home phones, and everything.
All right, very good. And Cheryl, are you employed now?
No, I'm not.
And what kind of job would you like? Do you have any job training or skills?
I have, not really. I'm disabled right now. I have back problems, arthritis problems. So.
I see. So you're not really a good candidate for that.
No, really.
Not for standing up at a fast food place,
no.
That's for sure. Abby, how about you? Are you looking for a job? Are you?
Absolutely. Right now, I just started college, so I'm doing that part-time. And I'm also about to graduate the mentorship program that they have at the Columbus House, where I'll be placed and do an internship, which they give you a job.
Good, very good. So. Marie at the mic, let me ask you a question. If you're looking for a job, here's a problem. You're looking for a job in fast food, something like that, and I hope you find that job.
Mm-hmm.
If that job only pays you $5, $15, $6 an hour, something like that, how are you going to get housing making that little money?
See, the only problem is I can work as fast food, but I like working with elderly people also. I like helping take care of elderly people because my grandmother was elderly, and I always took care of her. I was always there for her.
Mm-hmm.
I was the only grandchild that was there for her. So.
But how much money do you think you need to make in a week or in a month to be able to get housing for yourself in New Haven?
Enough to get me on my feet and to get me an apartment.
And do you
It doesn't
have,
matter how much it costs.
Do you have any idea, though, what the actual dollar figure you need in New Haven is?
$9 an hour I need.
That's what you need?
Yes.
And fast food pays what?
$8.50 an hour.
You can get that in fast food around here?
No. If you've been here long enough, you can.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, very good. Thank you very much, Marie, and I hope you get that job. Let's take another phone call. Let's go to Ted in Victoria, British Columbia. Ted, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Hi. I want to call in a pledge. Actually, I pledge to help out at my local food bank and the local shelter as much as I can possibly do. So I want to thank you very much for putting on your show. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much, Ted.
About the drug issue, I think there's a lot of stigmatism, and it's like being thrown onto people. What is so great about our capitalist system that people are turning to drugs for in the first place? You know, they're not asking that question. You know, like, what is it? You know, get back to it. What is it that got you started on drugs in the first place? You know, and you're going to find out most people that will tell you the truth that there is some despair, and it's an economic-based disparity.
See, I don't know if that's true or not, but let me ask the experts here, okay? So, Leslie, well, let me start with you, Abby. You're the one here who has said that you had a substance problem, and what started you down that road?
Well, a lot of it was immaturity, a lot of stress due to being such a young single mom.
Do you think it's despair from the capitalist system?
I don't know if I would say that was my particular reason. That might have been it for other people.
Mm-hmm. But it wasn't that. It was just that you were young and stupid, you're thinking? No offense, but, you know.
No, basically that would be it.
Okay. All right. And Sharon, what would you say? Because you also said you had a problem.
I was older, and it was despair. You don't know where to go because you don't know where there's places for people to talk to. I was a housewife, had young children, didn't have nobody to talk to, had to work, and didn't have the energy to be able to work, take care of the kids, take care of the house. And started using drugs to help me be able to keep going.
So you think Ted might be on to something, but not for everybody.
No, not for everybody. But usually, anytime I went back to using drugs, it was always because I was depressed. You know, something tragic happened, a death, I lost my home, something.
Right. Leslie, what would you say?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with loneliness. That could be an issue. Depression, unemployment. Those are the main issues that causes people to use drugs, I would think. And
I think we're getting a very small sample, and there's a lot of other things that go on. But, Ted, I think just on this basis of this sample, I would have to say there might be some credence to your theory.
And also, you know, I also feel very sorry for a lot of the women that have to couch surf that never actually have that strength to go in and apply at the shelters. And I know some of the abuse there is like, well, come on, share with me. You know, I've got a bottle, have half of it with me. You know, and you're couch surfing, what are you supposed to say? No?
Yeah.
Anyways, why I'm calling for, though, I'm really curious to find out from the rest of the people out there, maybe, you know, as the hours click off here, if you could find out for me. Here in Victoria, it's difficult to sleep unmolested outside. There's always going to be, like, some cop or a security guard or somebody's going to come along halfway through the night and purposely wake you up, tell you that you shouldn't be there, and then they let you go back to sleep again. Is that the same case
I know that that's very prevalent in some cities, but not in all. Ted, I'm going to thank you for the call.
Thank you
very much. Leslie, did you encounter that? Were you harassed by the police at all?
No, never been
Cheryl?
Harassed.
Cheryl?
No, never.
Okay. And Abby, you weren't on the streets, right? So.
I was for a very brief
period. Were you harassed by the police?
No.
Okay, but this is New Haven. This is not quite as... I know New Haven's got problems. I don't want to be naive, but it's not as hardcore as some of those cities are. So, all right, let's try and get in one more call. Katie from Painesville, Ohio.
Hi there.
Hi, Katie. Welcome to the marathon. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, I would like to say a few things, actually. I lived homeless for a while because I was a runaway, mm-hmm. and it was my choice to leave home, but I left home because of abuse. And I felt that it was better to be homeless than it was to tolerate the abuse. And I think I would have felt that way whether the abuse was my parents or my spouse. It would not have mattered who the abuse came from.
Right.
So much as it was to get away from it, to feel the freedom of not being afraid to walk in the door. And I met the best and the worst people in my life when I was homeless. And I was homeless for 3 years. One of the things that I discovered when I was very young is that most people are under the misconception that homeless people are A, either runaways, as was my case, or B, drug addicts, or C, nobody, people that don't care. They just choose to drop out of life. But I can tell you that having owned my own home for 15 years, I'm on the verge of being homeless again. And it's been circumstances beyond my control that has put me in this position. And in another 90 days, I'm not going to have a home.
Katie, first of all,
part-time jobs.
Yeah. First of all, Katie, let me say, we're almost out of time, but I wish that does not happen. We all wish you the very best. One reason we do a 14-hour broadcast, though, is there are so many issues to cover, and you've raised two of them right here. One is, there's other reasons why people are homeless, not just substance abuse, not just losing a job, getting away from an abusive situation is one. I wish we had more time to talk about it. And you make a very sad but very real point, which is just like homelessness isn't a permanent condition, neither is having a house. And you can lose it even after you got it. And I'm very sorry to hear that yours is at risk.
Well, mine's at risk for a reason that I wouldn't change. My father was very ill, and I took care of him through cancer. Bills stacked up, and things got further out of control than I was able to look at. I was looking at my father, and I was dealing with his illness and his medications and taking care of him, and I don't regret a moment of it.
Let's leave it there. I wish I had more time, but I wish you the very best and good for you for taking care of your father, and thank you so much for calling into the marathon. Let me tell people out there, if your station is leaving the marathon, again, the website for the marathon is www.homelessnessmarathon.org. And if you go there, you can find not only the webcam, but you can click on to the web feed, the webcast, I guess it's called, of the marathon. And if you're more computer literate than I am, you can listen in that way. We're really out of time. I wish we had more. But I want to thank Leslie, Cheryl, and Abby. I want to thank all three of you for sharing your stories here and for talking to the people in America about the circumstance that you're in.
Thank you for caring so much.
Thank you. And I just want to wish you, each one of you, the very, very best. I just hope you all get really good housing. I hope you all get really good jobs. And you know what? It's Valentine's Day. A little romance wouldn't hurt.
Good night. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we're going to go to a remote in the next hour from... I don't even remember where we're going, actually. We're going to Maine, and then we'll be back. So we're going to be going to Maine for talking with teens, talking about homelessness, and then we'll be back for a little open mic time in the next hour, and we will be back with you soon.
You are listening to the 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, produced in conjunction with WPKN Community Radio in Bridgeport, Connecticut. The opinions expressed on this broadcast are not necessarily those of the producing or participating organizations or of the originating or affiliated radio stations. To view the webcast of this broadcast, order tapes, or contact nobody after the show, go to www.homelessnessmarathon.org.